Chapter 58. And shunned the obvious course? I gave him Ney, Saud, and Junid, and 80,000 men, and he does nothing. Really, it might seem as though we meant to let this Wellington be even with us there. Berthier, his mighty forts at Tors Vedras hamper Messina, and quite preclude advance. Napoleon, oh well, no matter. Why should I linger on these acts of war now that I have a son? Exeunt Napoleon by one door, and by another the President of the Senate, Cambaciers, Lebrun, Berthier, and officials. Chorus of ironic spirits, aerial music, the will itself a slave to him, and holds it blissful to obey. He said, go to, it is my whim, obed a bride without delay, who shall unite my dull new name with one that shone in Caesar's day. He must conceive you hear my claim, and bear a son, no daughter, mind who shall hand on my form, and fame, O future times as I have designed, and at the birth throughout the land, must cannon roar and alp horns wind. The will grew conscious at command, and ordered issue as he planned. The interior of the palace is veiled. Scene IV, Spain. Albuera, the dawn of a mid-May day in the same spring shows the village of Albuera with the country around it, as viewed from the summit of a line of hills on which the English and their allies are ranged under Beresford. The landscape swept by the eye includes to the right foreground a hill loftier than any, and somewhat detached from the range. The green slopes behind and around this hill are untrodden though in a few hours, to be the sanguinary scene of the most murderous struggle of the whole war. The village itself lies to the left foreground, with its stream flowing behind it in the distance on the right. A creeping brook at the bottom of the heights held by the English joins the stream by the village. Behind the stream some of the French forces are visible. Away behind these stretches a great wood several miles in area, out of which the Albuera stream emerges, and behind the furthest verge of the wood the morning sky lightens momently. The birds in the wood, unaware that this day is to be different from every other day they have known there, are heard singing their overtures with their usual serenity. Dumb show, as objects grow more distinct it can be perceived, that some strategic dispositions of the night are being completed by the French forces, which the evening before lay in the woodland to the front of the English army. They have emerged during the darkness, and large sections of them infantry, cuirassiers, and artillery have crept round to Beresford's right without it suspecting the movement, where they lie hidden by the great hill aforesaid, though not more than half a mile from his right wing. Spirit of the years, a hot ado goes forward here today, if I may read the imminent intent from signs and tokens blent with weird unrest along the firmament of causal coils in passionate display. Look narrowly, and what do you witness say? Spirit of the pities, I see red smears upon the sickly dawn, and seeming drops of gore. On earth below are men unnatural, and mechanic drawn mixed nationalities in row and row, wheeling them to and fro in moves, dissociate from their soul's demand, for dynast sense, that few even understand. Spirit of the years, speak more materially, and less in dream. Spirit of rumor, I'll do it. The stir of strife grows well defined around the hamlet and the church thereby. Till, from the wood, the ponderous columns wind, guided by God in it, with whirl nigh. They bear upon the vill. But the gruff guns of Dixon's Portuguese punch spectral vistas through the maze of these. More Frenchmen press, and roaring antiphons of cannon reconstitute the roofs and walls and trees. Spirit of the pities, wrecked are the ancient bridge, the green spring plot, the blooming fruit tree, the fair flower knot. Spirit of rumor, yet the true mischief to the English might is meant to fall not there. Look to the right, and read the shaping scheme by yon hillside, where cannon, foot, and brisk dragoons you see, with whirl and later Maubourg to guide, waiting to breast the hill brow bloodily. Beresford now becomes aware of this project on his flank, and sends orders to throw back his right to face the attack. The order is not obeyed. Almost at the same moment the French rush is made, the Spanish and Portuguese allies of the English are beaten back, and the hill is won. But two English divisions bear from the center of their front, and plod desperately up the hill to retake it. Spirit sinister, now he among us who may wish to be a skilled practitioner in sloggery, should watch this hour's fruition yonder there, and he will know, if knowing ever were, how mortals may be freed their fleshly cells, and quaint red doors set open sweating fells, by methods swift and slow and foul and fair. The English, who have plunged up the hill, are caught in a heavy mist, that hides from them and advance in their rear of the lancers and hussars of the enemy. The lines of the Buffs, the 66th, and those of the 48th, who were with them, in a chaos of smoke, steel, sweat, curses, and blood, are beheld melting down like wax from an erect position to confused heaps. Their forms lie rigid, or twitch and turn, as they are trampled over by the hoofs of the enemy's horse. Those that have not fallen are taken. Spirit of the pities, it works as you, uncanny phantom, wist. Whose is that towering form that tears across the mist to where the shocks are sorest? His with arm outstretched, and grimy face, and bloodshot eye, like one who, having done his deeds, will die? Spirit of rumor, he is one Beresford, who heads the fight for England here today. Spirit of the pities, he calls the sight despite itself. Parries yon lancer's thrust, and with his own sword renders dust to dust. The ghastly climax of the strife is reached. The combatants are seen to be firing grape and canister at speaking distance, and discharging musketry in each other's faces when so close that their complexions may be recognized. Hot corpses, their mouths blackened by cartridge biting, and surrounded by castaway knapsacks, firelocks, hats, stocks, flint boxes, and priming horns, together with red and blue rags of clothing, gaiters, epaulets, limbs, and viscera accumulate on the slopes, increasing from twos and threes to half dozens, and from half dozens to heaps, which steam with their own warmth as the spring rain falls gently upon them. The critical instant has come, and the English break. But a comparatively fresh division, with fusiliers, is brought into the turmoil by Hardinge and Cole, and these make one last strain to save the day, and their names and lives. The fusiliers mount the incline, and issuing from the smoke and mist startle the enemy by their arrival on a spot deemed won. Semi-chorus I of the pities, aerial music, they come, beset by riddling hail, they sway like sedges as a gale, the fail, and win, and win, and fail. Albuera. Semi-chorus too, they gain the ground there, yard by yard, their brows and hair and lashes charred, their blackened teeth set firm and hard. Semi-chorus I, their mad assailants rave and reel, and face, as men who scorn to feel, the close-lined, three-edged prongs of steel. Semi-chorus too, till faintness follows closing in, when, faltering headlong down, they spin like leaves. But those pay well who win Albuera. Semi-chorus I, out of 6,000 souls, that swear to hold the mount, or pass elsewhere, but 1,800 muster there. Semi-chorus too, pale colonels, captains, ranksmen lie, facing the earth or facing sky, they strove to live, they stretch to die. Semi-chorus I, friends, foemen, mingle, heap and heap. Hide their hacked bones, earth. Deep, 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 where harmless worms caress and creep. Chorus, hide their hacked bones, earth. Deep, 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 where harmless worms caress and creep. What man can grieve? What woman weep? Better than waking is to sleep. Albuera. The night comes on, and darkness covers the battlefield. Scene V, Windsor Castle. A room in the king's apartment, the walls of the room are padded, and also the articles of furniture, the stuffing being overlaid with satin and velvet, on which are worked in gold thread monograms and crowns. The windows are guarded, and the floor covered with thick cork, carpeted. The time is shortly after the last scene. The king is seated by a window, and two of Dr. Willis's attendants are in the room. His Majesty is now 72, His sight is very defective, but he does not look ill. He appears to be lost in melancholy thought, and talks to himself reproachfully, hurried manner on occasion, being the only irregular symptom that he betrays.
King, in my lifetime I did not look after her enough. And now she is lost to me, and I shall never see her more. Had I but known, had I but thought of it. Gentlemen, when did I lose the Princess Amelia? First attendant. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.